Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Off the Clock. This is the Bald Move Premium Podcast, exclusively. Lord, I can't even get through the intro, Jim.
Elusively
and exclusively. Like the words slipping out of my fucking mouth.
Effusively.
Profusively for club members and patrons only. And this is where we talk about the stuff that we don't have a full show for, but we're not doing officially. That's why it's Off the Clock. So there's a couple topics that we had to talk about here. You had gone back and seen Harder They Fall, so we can kind of get your opinions on that and have a more roundabout discussion of it. We've both seen a good amount, I think, of the new Cowboy Bebop live action.
I saw three episodes,
and I've seen four, so pretty we're neck and neck. I want to talk about my plans to cover Witcher, the new Witcher series, and my thoughts on Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf, and maybe an exciting project coming soon. We're going to host what we call it on the This Week on Bald Move, a Matt Berry symposium.
Okay.
Where we talk about some of his lesser appreciated features, like The Toast of London and The Dark mm-hmm. Place feature by Garth Marenghi. And then we're going to consider some Patreon topics or some news about Patreon anyway.
Yeah.
And if we have time, cause we might be running low on time today. If we have time, I'm going to do a little Christmas roundup. I'm going to tell you about the Christmas movies me and Cecily have watched so far. And if we don't get to it this time, I definitely will get to it, in December. Hell, we might even talk about over lunch. Anyway, where do you want to start? Harder They Fall?
Sure. Yeah, I really like this movie.
It's a hell of a good time. And like, I think it, like, I was like halfway through the film, like, this is just, unless they really fuck up the ending, this is firmly in like a Quentin Tarantino, Rodriguez kind of like just romp, you know, like just fun, witty dialogue, crisp, badass dialogue, really good action scene, blood galore. What did you think of the final act?
I think this movie is almost flawless. I had such a good time watching it. The only complaint I have, literally the only complaint, is that the final fight scene, the final fight scene leads up to the climax of the movie, but the final fight scene lingers a little bit too long. Just like... a minute too long. Other than that, like, man, this movie is so good.
I don't want to spoil it because what I was getting at is like there's a twist or like an expanded bit of storytelling at the end of this movie that I think kicks it almost to 3:10 to Yuma territory, where it's like not just a fun romp, not just like a Tombstone where it's like that's a badass movie and it's quotable and it's everyone in it is fucking cool set to 11. But it's like, damn, that's like a really good Western.
Yeah, they've really twisted up at the end, and I enjoyed that thoroughly. I don't know, all the characters made the right decisions at the end of that, I felt. There's a lot of movies that would have taken the information that they give you and changed some fates with that information, but this movie makes the right calls, I felt, on all fronts.
Has the courage to live and die by its convictions. Like, they go for like probably what would happen in this situation than what you might as an audience member want to see happen. Yeah. And I actually appreciate that.
Me too.
I appreciate a movie pitching right down the middle. What did you think of the cowboy action shooting? The stunts, and I know you said that the final fight was a little too long, which I don't know this necessarily that I agree with because I was digging it the whole time. But what did you think in general of this like stunt work and the shooting and the roping and the riding?
I thought it was great. I mean, it's a little bloodier than your typical cowboy fare, I think. There's a lot of splatter in this movie. If you're accustomed to any level of like action movie violence, this will be fine for you. You know, it's not like blowing up people's heads or anything. It's more like there's a significant amount of blood that comes from the gunshots.
Yeah, yeah. Just like,
it's not gore. It's just
crimson red,
a lot of blood,
paint buckets of it coming out of people's heads.
And it was kind of awesome. Just like the rest of this movie, right? It's got a style. It's got a flair to it.
So last year we saw, I think this is the first, I think we were even talking about it during the review of The Five Bloods, that like, this guy has been in like, I don't know, a college production of something and this and that. Jonathan Majors played like, I don't know, some punk kid son of, I forget which of the Five Bloods. Yeah. And then like, he has had quite the year or two. He's a fucking just giant. Jonathan Majors is just a giant star now.
Yeah. No, he's kind of snuck way up on me,
but he's like, he is fucking badass in this.
Yeah. The Five Bloods, I was like, okay. Yeah. He's what he needs to be in this, but he's kind of an annoying character. And
he's
that's
like a little boy in that film. Uh-huh. And he's like a goddamn man in this.
and Lovecraft Country. Like, I'm super impressed with his work over the last couple of years.
Even the stuff in Loki, He Who Remains or whatever the hell his name is. I thought that was like a really interesting take on that kind of character. And he's just so fucking cool in this movie.
And then, of course, Idris Elba. I mean, he's been around for a while now and he is still putting out this level of stuff.
He's a bad guy too.
I know, man. I can't imagine anyone better in this role. He's just gonna be the nastiest guy you've ever seen.
Idris Elba and Regina King and Lakeith Stanfield as the three baddies.
Lakeith Stanfield,
dude, that guy is, speaking of another guy who's become a star. I first noticed him as one of the hangers on the Paperboy character. I forget what his name is in Atlanta, and he's so like offbeat and funny. And he had a memorable turn in Get Out. I've seen him in a couple other things, and then this is just like he goes full like Johnny Ringo from Tombstone. He's just like this. I don't know, poet, murderer, cowboy, warrior, monk. Like it's a really great take. The other thing is, I guess every one of these characters was based on a real life cowboy.
Everyone,
cowboy.
Oh wow.
And the one that I got an inkling they're doing this when Delore Lindo showed up as Bass Reeves. I'm like, fuck, I remember that. That was a black U.S. Marshal from the Watchmen season. And but apparently, these are all like real life, this era cowboys from the West.
So first black Marshal west of the Mississippi? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if it was
black
west or east, I can't
of the
remember.
Mississippi were dime a dozen. Back then. We just couldn't cross the street without running over three of them. But west, that was the real standout. Everybody in this movie I thought crushed it. Zazie Beetz was great. One of the Wayans brothers showed up at some point. It's a great film. I highly recommend it. Man, some of the shots of the West was just beautiful too. And like some of the I forget what was the White Town? Was it just called White Town or something?
I don't know the name of it, but yeah, like, totally white.
Me and Cecily were on the couch. We just like literally gasped when like just smash cut to that town. And it's so fucking cool.
The look of the town that, I don't remember any of the names of the towns or the characters, but I really like the look of the town that they spend a lot of time in and that they're kind of fighting over. That town is so colorful, right? Like everything is painted in yellows and blues and reds. And
yes, it is.
Yeah. Then you go over to the White Town. It's all just white.
I wish I could find out the names. I was trying to like high speed scan through Wikipedia because like I feel like there's even some cleverness to that, but it's a great film if you like westerns. Even if you don't really like westerns, if you like Quentin Tarantino stuff, just like violent, mm-hmm. bloody shit with like really cool, sick dialogue. It's a great time.
Yeah, if you like style, I mean, the music backs all that up, right?
Oh,
like,
my God.
There's
yes.
great music in here, too.
The music is amazing, too. Let's move on to Cowboy Bebop.
All right. Speaking now, of style.
Yeah, I came to Cowboy Bebop fairly late. Cecily is a massive Cowboy Bebop fan. She's estimated she's seen the series like 20 times or something, you know, because wow. it was just like always on Adult Swim, and she watched a lot of Adult Swim, and she went through it a bunch. So seen the movie a bunch of times, got a bunch of merch. I have seen, I think this about, we just rewatched it. The whole season included the whole first season. Well, I guess the only season and the movie. So I think this was my fourth time through.
Jeez. Okay.
And I've always had, that's her favorite thing, man. I got, you know, it's like, sometimes you got to do things for love. And I don't mind it. But the thing is I got to say that I always find it hard to track the main plot. Like, yeah. I feel like I'm halfway in that thing and I'm like, oh fuck, there's this consistent thing going on in Spike. I should probably be paying attention to it. And I always find it very hard to like keep track of like, you know, who, what was he, an ex-military guy? Oh no, I guess he was a gangster. Oh, I guess he was. And it's like really twisty and it never quite clicks. I've really enjoyed watching this because I feel like they've really streamlined that. And I think some people hate this, but I really like the fact that they've kind of like streamlined and maybe even enhanced some of the plot to make it a little bit easier to follow and have clearer emotional stakes. But I'm really digging it so far. What's your relationship with Bebop, and what are you thinking of it?
I saw Cowboy Bebop back when Netflix was just a baby. It had to be 13 years ago. It's been a while. Whenever Netflix just first started streaming, they had Cowboy Bebop on there, mm-hmm. and I watched through that whole thing. It's the only time I've ever seen it all.
Still do, by the way. They got the whole series. The only mm-hmm. thing they don't have is the movie. Well, yeah, the animated movie.
Okay. I think I've seen the movie. I know it drops in a weird place in the season. It's like episode 20 or something, and they're like,
but
26
episodes. It literally doesn't mean, like, they say that, and that's true, but like, as far as I can tell, it
doesn't
it's
matter.
Not really set. Yeah, it's just they only say that because they want to get the whole gang together. You got to have Ed and Faye and
gotcha.
Ryan, so...
Yeah, and so I don't have like a great strong memory of Cowboy Bebop. The thing I remember about it is it was very cool and very funny. I couldn't tell you anything about the main plot other than there's a rose that he drops like 1,000 times. Somebody drops 1,000 times.
There's an episode and, for 30 straight minutes. They play this do 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 like and like it makes me want to scream every time we get to that point. But yeah.
Huh. And I swear that rose like drops 52 times during the series and you don't get to it until the very last episode or something, right? It's like the longest slow roll I've ever seen. Which that's fine. I wasn't watching for the plot, honestly. I was watching for the style. And I feel like Netflix kind of nails it. I'll say I watched the first episode of this and I was not really super interested in watching more episodes because they take the first couple of episodes of Cowboy Bebop and just mash them together. And it's almost one to one as far as the shot. I'm like, okay, they're just telling the exact same story in the exact same way with live action characters. Not interested.
I've seen this story. Sin City treatment, essentially.
Yeah. So I don't know. After episode one, I was like, not interested. And then Alexis and I sat down for dinner two nights ago and we were like, well, what are we going to watch? We watched through all of Wellington Paranormal. We watched through all of, I don't know, the Paramount teased us with the first Star Trek Lower Decks. And now we can't get any more of that unless we sign up for their shitty service. So we ended up just going, well, I guess let's watch the next episode of Cowboy Bebop. And that's where things changed. The first episode is very, very similar to the anime, but the second episode starts to tell a story that's slightly, it's not a different story, it's just told in a different way. I feel like they're still going for the same thing ultimately, but how they're going to get there is different, which has me a little more interested in watching it.
It's probably smart for them to hew very close to the source material in that first episode, because I know they had a lot of, you know, rabid fans that are like probably corked off and there was even, you know, my big concern going into this season was I didn't buy John Cho. I thought the Spike is great. Mustafa Sharif, is that
I don't know his name.
And then I thought I don't know who Faye Valentine, I've never seen her anything in my life. The Faye Valentine, like, you know, it's not Faye Valentine from the series, but what the fuck? That'd be ridiculous if you tried to make that anime girl real. But she's very good in like the attitude and the humor and all that kind of stuff. And that came across in the trailer. And Ayn, of course, is a corgi, and he's perfect. Perfect casting. but John Cho is like, Spike's a weird character, right? He's like completely deadpan and ironic and detached, but he's also super duper traumatized and like, just, you know, like he deeply cares what people think about him, but he doesn't trust anyone and to let them. He's like very, you know, he's a very complicated guy. And I feel like John Cho is just playing like, I just woke up out of bed.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is a fair read of what he's doing in the trailer. But like when you see him in kind of action and not just like doing the kung fu shit, which he's doing a really good job. I don't know if that's stunt double or they're doing some CG or what, but he's does a really good job at that stuff. He's just it sounds like he's doing the American dub of Spike. Like he's got the voice nailed down and that like dry, like, you know, that the part where he's putting the gun on Faye's like, I want to kill her. I just want to kill her a little bit. Like it's perfect. I can't believe how good of a Spike he is and how he doesn't look ridiculous in that costume at all.
I think it's gotten better as the episodes have progressed. I think that first episode was like, I wasn't super impressed. I was impressed. He got like 90% of the way. But I feel like in subsequent episodes, he's gotten to 100% of what I think of as Spike. And maybe I'm just losing track of anime Spike and he's becoming my Spike. But
could be.
He's really good. His smile, like he's got this perfect, like halfway between. He's almost like some kind of troll when he's interacting with Jet. Mm-hmm. And like that relationship is really good, too. They've kind of nailed the antagonistic parts of that relationship.
Yeah, like big brother, little brother, little bit of the competition, antagonism. Yeah, but yeah, like affection and concern for each other. Yeah, it's just fun. I think it's just fun to watch. Like now, what do you think this show is rated on Rotten Tomatoes right now? If you had to guess,
if I know the internet, it's not 90%. Are you talking about critics or are you talking about audience?
Either. You can speculate on both.
All right. Let's say the critics give it an 80% and the audience gives it a 60.
Okay. The critics give it 48% and the audience gives it 53.
All right. They justify this, critics. What are some of these reviews?
This, I looked and it's like, I don't know. This is an incredibly divisive adaptation. I've never seen, like, usually in something like Lord of the Rings, it's like 90%. And you've always got some people like, they didn't do Tom Bombadil. And Arwen's too much of a character and stuff like that. But it usually falls into like, you know, there's a majority opinion and or like, you know, there's some where it's just everyone hates it. It's like 90%. Like, this is just, who is this movie? Who is this even for? I've never seen like people say the opposite things about a thing, you know, like people hardcore Bebop fans are saying, I am super disappointed in this and these are nothing like these characters and this is a watered down version of blah. And then other Bebop fans are saying like, oh my God, these guys are nailing it. It's wild to me. I've never seen this kind of like split decision before.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that I just don't know what you would complain about, really, if you're a critic. Because presumably they should be, you know, outside of that. This is not my Bebop kind of shit. Like, and just war, like, what are the merits maybe of the show? Maybe it's,
only,
on
maybe
its,
it's
own?
Only the comic book guy type, you know, fucking, maybe it's only the geek, yeah, geek media that's bothering, you know, you're not just getting RogerEbert.com on this case.
Could be.
I don't know. Roger reviewed the Bebop movie, quite liked it. It says, okay, here's top critics. Somehow the producers have managed to make a show that appears to have provoked skepticism among the original's devotees without effectively inviting newcomers to the party. I guess. Sadly, it misses the core appeal of Cowboy Bebop, which finds its deepest resonance on a richly textured surface. What? What kind of modern art bullshit is this?
Textured surface? Yeah.
And its resolute ordinariness, the main value of this new Bebop would be to drive you back to watch the old one. All right. I don't know, because, like, it's just cool. The music's cool, which was, you know, they got the band back together literally to record a new original score for this. I think the intro is, like, makes me giddy every single time I see it, like how stylized and just cool it is. And I don't know. I mean,
I'll say it's too long. I think it's amazing the difference between intros in older shows and the intros in modern television. Modern television gets you in and out in like less than 10 seconds. This thing lingers for like a minute and a half. It's it's too much. They should have condensed it. But then Cowboy Bebop fans would have gotten a Rotten Tomatoes and given them a 40%. So
yeah, honestly, you're riling me up. This is the one thing that I have not felt the desire to skip.
I love that song. Remix it too. It's great, but
they also like each episode has a slightly different arrangement to get you launched into.
Episode. Yeah.
At least there's been a couple of them where they've done that.
I watched the first one. I watched like 10 seconds of the second one and I skip them.
I'm giving that practice a 53% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know.
Because it's just really divisive and polarizing. It's got the fans got the host riled up.
get me to the content, and don't put your content after the credits either.
All right. Do you want to talk some Matt Berry talk?
Okay. Sounds good to me.
I mentioned, you know, how funny I think Matt Berry is, and I've never seen anything else. And you had mentioned like last year, it's like, oh, he's really funny in IT Crowd. I'm like, I've tried the IT Crowd. I just don't. It's
and you got to get through a whole season just to get to him. So.
Oh my God, even worse. So like, I was like, I don't know about that. And he said, well, there's also this Toast of London. You can't find this streaming anywhere, as far as I can tell. I had to resort to the Bay of Pirates. But what got me interested again is, you know, I was online reading some stuff about people's discussion of What We Do in the Shadows. And Matt Berry being so fucking funny always comes up. And people said, here's a list of things, if you like Matt Berry, you should check out. And Toast of London was one of them. And the other is this thing called Dark Place by Darth Marenghi. And let's talk about the Toast of London first, because I guess have you seen all of the first season, or have you seen
all of Toast of London? I've seen none of Dark Place.
Okay. I've only seen the first two episodes of Toast of London.
Okay.
And I think it's, if you're looking to mainline Matt Berry, that's the place to go.
Yeah.
Because he's the star of the show and he is just doing the most Matt Berry stuff. Like, I laughed out loud 5 or 6 times a 30-minute episode. There's this bit, because he's a, what'd you say? Like an actor on the decline. Yeah,
yeah, he was never really too much on the incline, but he got uphill a little bit, and now he's coming down it.
Yeah, it pairs so well with Garth Marenghi when we talk about it. Yeah, he's Matt Berry, and he's an actor down on his luck, and he's got an agent that's kind of like representing, you know, it's a lot of the kind of BoJack Horseman. Like, she's kind of got a ramshackle agency, at least that's my opinion of it. But she sends him to do this voice, because he does some voice work, you know, because that's the phase of career he's in. And they just need, he's like, I can't do this. He's like, it's just one word. How long could it take? And they give him this sound booth. And they make Matt Berry say the word yes. What do you think? 100? 150 times?
At least.
Like, he might not give the same line reading twice. It is incredible. I was screaming laughing by the end of that, because he's just like, it's kind of like almost gets to be like a, because they're just like, oh, can we just, he's like, so he steps into Boosie, he's like, yes. All right, that's great. That's perfect. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Could we get another one just, you know, for coverage? And that's just begins like this almost like fucking Marquis de Sade, like BDSM scene with him. Just, yeah. It's, oh God. It's worth watching a pilot episode just for that scene alone.
I don't know what these guys have against him. The producers on that recording.
I think it just might be the maniacalness of, you know, having an actor that, you know, is so desperate that they'll take this job, and that you are going to just abuse them because of that. I don't know.
Definitely trolling him for sure.
Yeah, it's oh my God. It's so funny. Does it stay that funny? Like, throughout its run?
I think that show is mostly good. Matt Berry is definitely, I would say, the only reason to watch that show. You don't get a lot of other reasons throughout the show. I thought
some of the side characters looked interesting, but you don't really, you know, get the focus on them in the first episode or two.
I would say the closest one that is like, that becomes interesting is his roommate. The very successful former actor, I would say, I think is what he is, mm-hmm. who sort of lets Matt Berry stay in his attic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward. I've got all of season one by hook or by crook, and I'm looking forward to that. Dark Place.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I've seen this mentioned before, like usually in the context of like, what are things like Danger 5? What are things like The Spoils of Babylon? I don't know if you remember that Will Ferrell project from Stars or Bravo or something. But this is one of these metafictional narratives where the joke is this horror fiction guy who's kind of like Stephen King, but like a really m'lady kind of fedora wearing trench coat kind of version of Stephen King. Self-important, pompous. He's this horror author that had a big run in the 80s. And at the height of his fame, they hired him to write a supernatural, like, General Hospital soap opera. You know, like, okay. Take a soap opera and infuse it with my unique blend of horror. Mm-hmm. And that this had never seen the light of day. Like, it only aired in like one particular market in Hungary or something, or mm-hmm. like Brazil or something, where it's pulled off the thing. And I forget what the conceit of why it might be, like, you know, with the recent success of Twilight and these other like monster movies, he thinks it's the time to like re-release these with like essentially creator commentary. So every episode opens up with this Garth Marenghi guy in his office with the skulls and the typewriter, and he's sets up the episode and like the filming conditions and how he got, he cast his agent who had never acted a day in his life as the role of the hospital administrator. And that bit pays. Mm-hmm. That's the guy that has the crazy hair in IT Crowd.
Richard Adoyed.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know how to say his name. Yeah.
Agonye. Is that it?
I have no idea.
He is the hospital administrator, and that pays off. So the first time you see the episode, he just delivers all of his lines in a monotone, looking right at the camera. Everyone else is like acting. So he introduces the thing, and then it's like a 20-minute episode of this stupid, you know, hospital with a hell mouth that's opened up under it. And it's got a psychic nurse, and it's got Matt Berry essentially playing like sexy Doug from ER, the George Clooney character.
Okay.
You know, he's got an earring, sure. And he's got the long hair, and he's the Matt, you know, he's got the Matt Berry carries himself like he is the Mac.
Uh-huh.
You know, like he is extremely attractive and sexy and successful with women. He probably is. But you look at him and the gap between him and George Clooney is huge. But this television show doesn't know that either. It's
right.
But the thing is like, so that sounds great, right? You're like, fucking yeah, this show is going to be the tits.
Mm-hmm.
Watching it is kind of boring.
Really?
It's like almost too high concept.
Hmm.
Like, imagine watching Nightman, like the, you know, the Always Sunny episode, but 16 episodes of it.
Like, okay, all right.
It's like, oh, some of the jokes are like, look at the bad special effects and look at these stupid horror concepts and outro. But like, it's literally just pointing out a thing, a trope, and being like, ha ha.
You know, I'm not so sure that a lot of his shows aren't like that. Like Toast of London, I think, becomes a little bit like that too. Because that sound booth stuff that they do in that, they do it throughout the entire series.
Oh,
and it's not like a one-off or you know, once every five or six episodes. It's like once every episode, or maybe maybe every other episode, but it's all the time. And,
I mean,
and it's funny usually, but also
it's
just like playing on the exact same thing over and over again.
It's like comedy torture, which I kind of respect when it when you can pull it off and make it work. And I feel like the Maringi stuff is I just need a little bit more just funny. Like, that's one thing that I love about Danger 5 is like, yes, it's very on the nose and is doing the thing that it's doing, which is funny in and of itself. But then they also have a pretty solid kind of like office workplace banter comedy with pretty solid characters underpinning it all. You know, they're crazy characters, but it's like in an Always Sunny kind of way. They like play well off each other. And this show, not so much. Like, it's a bad television show, but like not in the way that Danger 5 was. But I don't know. It's got good Matt Berry. Like, every time he shows up and, you know, starts doing his Matt Berry thing, it's a hoot. But
yeah, he can kind of make it. Does Matt Berry play characters, or did he just play himself?
I mean,
because he plays the same damn guy in everything I've ever seen.
It's very Will Ferrell-esque, where it's a very good, it's a great character, man. But it's pretty the same. It's like what you do with that, like, you know, make him an immortal vampire. That's a fun version of Matt Berry, right?
Sure.
Make him a washed up actor who is kind of actually pathetic, you know, not, but he's still got the swagger of Matt Berry. That's funny, right? You know, make him like, you know, the what he sees in the mirror, you know, like a hunky George Clooney type. But you're right. It's always just fucking Matt Berry.
Yeah.
Yeah. You make hire Bob Goldthwait. You don't want him showing up talking to the King's English, right?
No, for sure.
That's why Bobcat went behind the camera, because he's like, I'm tired of doing this shit. And they're like, well, we don't need this. I'm sorry. We don't have any work for this. So what else we got? Do you want to get to the Patreon topics?
I would love to get to the Patreon topics, and I would also love our patrons to participate in the Patreon topics.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is the Patreon topic, which is where we talk about the fact that we're switching stuff up a bit. We are going to push the nomination of categories down a category. So now it's not going to be the exclusive domain of the executive producers. It's going to be executive and producer class patrons. And then the voting tier has been pushed down to everybody. Everybody, it's a patron.
Yeah, so, and we'll see if we need it. Historically, for people who aren't familiar, for producers, the way this has worked in the past is every month I'd go in and create a thread, or a post rather, on Patreon where you can suggest topics for Off the Clock. And every month we'll do one Off the Clock that includes Patreon topics. And then, assuming we got enough, like let's say we have five or six topics to talk about and we can't talk about all of them, we would kick all those topics down about a week before we record. We kick them down to the producer level, and they would vote on which one of those topics or which couple of topics they wanted us to talk about. Yeah, we didn't get enough participation in the executive producer level, so we're kicking them both down a level. And I think that'll fix the problem. I think posted these topic threads or topic posts.
Yeah.
In like the producer level or below, a lot of people have participated. So
yeah,
I'm hoping we get more participation, because that'd be cool.
It's not exactly a problem. It's just like, you know, I think it's a cool benefit. And the thing is Patreon.
Yeah, we're just finding the place for it.
as people kind of like, as that finds its own level, I think we'll naturally have enough mm-hmm. people in the different categories to make it work. But for now,
and maybe we'll have to move it up. Who knows? But
yeah. As if you get like 45 topics every month and the voting has got like, you know, 3.5% is the winner.
Right.
That's not great. That's not, no. that doesn't feel like democracy. But that's not the only change we made. Since we're pushing some benefits down the old stack, we have created a new benefit for the executive producers on Patreon to make sure that they feel executive. We're going to open up our movie pick. So if you don't know, anytime we have a situation like we have been for quite some time where we're in a prestige drought, there's not been a prestige television show that Jim and I have either been interested in covering or felt we were qualified to cover for some time. Hopefully that'll change in a new year. But anytime there's not a pulp or prestige thing that we have to do, you know, like a TV show, we like to throw in a movie, like a pulp movie or prestige movie. Usually Jim and I just decide that on ourselves. I think we've decided that we are going to each week or whenever we do these, we're going to select a panel of 3 to 4 movies and present it to our executive producers and saying, which of these movies would you like us to do?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that is the news. So if you are a patron of executive producer status and you got an opinion on which of those pulp movies we'd like to see, or you like to see us talk about, then get over to patreon.com/baldmove and have your voice heard, and look out each week to see if, because I imagine will be a lot more prestige stuff coming up too.
Yeah.
But yeah, check out each week to see what the latest slate of movies to vote for. Mm-hmm. Finally, I got an announcement, which is your wife, Alexis, turns out to be a big old Witcher fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like OG, read it in the original Croatian or whatever.
Right.
Worked on the translation, the original. No, that's a lie. Yeah. She's read like all the written materials. She's like way more. I've played half of the video game and watched the first season.
I've so, personally seen her play through the game multiple times. So
we did not, you might not recall this, but me, her and Cecily did a two women, one man podcast, a three person podcast, rounding up season one of The Witcher. Cecily is she's retired from podcasting, but mm-hmm. Alexis and I were talking and we thought it'd be fun if we got the band back together. So we are going to watch Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf, which is the like hour and a half animated series. It's actually a prequel. Geralt pals around with his Witcher mentor. I just had Vasimir, I think is his name. Vesemir.
Hmm.
This is Vesemir as a young man. Like, it shows his like transfer, like his up, like, you know, starts off as a little boy. How did he get involved with the Witchers? Goes through his initiation process to become a Witcher and kind of tracks, like, you know, how he became the dude he is in the modern Witcher timeline. And I thought it was great. I thought it was amazing animation. And it was a great story and I really enjoyed it. So we're going to talk about that sometime before Christmas, because The Witcher drops like kind of in the middle of our Christmas break. We're going to drop that to kind of have a preview for season two and just to have some Witcher content to talk about. And then we're going to come back in the new year with like a single big old Witcher podcast.
Okay. So, where are those going to be?
Pulp.
Bald Move Pulp.
We're going to pulp it up. That's pulpy as fuck. You can't get much pulpier than The Witcher, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get much pulpier than Henry Cavill's beefy beefcake body.
Oh, he injected a lot of pulp to get that body. Just are you kidding me?
Pulp injection. Oh my god. Yeah. That's not natty.
No. Hell no.
That's been pulped up. I think that's all we've got to talk about. Because I think we are a little bit, we're running up against I know it's not a long episode, but we are crazy busy. We've got like two separate Christmas mm-hmm. projects we're working on. We're trying to get caught up on The Expanse so we can get you guys those episodes as they drop. We're also like really working hard on getting you know, we've alluded to the fact that we're making some improvements in the website. We're making some improvements in the Patreon experience, so we can have like the entire archive of the Bald Move podcast over there. That's one of the limitations, mm-hmm. the ad-free archive of everything. We're experimenting with a forum replacement because, you know, doing away with the forum turned out to be super unpopular. So we're going to find a way to try to find a way to migrate that to a more stable platform that's hosted by someone that's not us. So there's lots of exciting things to work, and we've been working on a lot of things. So as a consequence of that, we got to bounce at the 40-minute mark. Thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate whether you're a club member or a patron, that you directly support us here at Bald Move. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of Off the Clock, and we'll see you on a future one just in a couple weeks. See ya.